Buddhism moved north out of India into China in the 2nd century of the Common Era, carried north by monks and by merchants on the trade routes that went out over the mountains of the Hindu Kush into Afghanistan and then on into the great trade routes called the Silk Road that moved across Central Asia and into the major mercantile centers of northern China. Here, Buddhism encountered, of course, a sophisticated and ancient civilization. China was a confident and thoroughly civilized region when these early Buddhist monks began to make contact with Chinese civilization. And for Buddhism to become part of China, as it eventually did, it was important for Buddhists to make some major changes in the way they thought through and expressed basic issues in Buddhist civilization. So one of our preoccupations later in this course will be all these subtle ways that Buddhism transformed itself in order to become thoroughly Chinese. From China, Buddhism was eventually carried to Korea, Japan, and Vietnam. So as you think schematically here at the beginning of our study about the different varieties of Buddhism in the world, you might lump Korean, Japanese, and Vietnamese Buddhism together as expressions of this great East Asian strand within the larger complex of the Buddhist tradition as a whole. In the 8th century of the Common Era, Buddhism was carried across the Himalayas from India into Tibet. Today, the Dalai Lama, who is the leader of the Tibetan Buddhist community, is one of the most visible and I think probably one of the most active Buddhist leaders in the world. In many ways, certainly he's been this way for me, he is not just a living symbol of Tibetan Buddhism, but really, for many people, he's been a symbol of Buddhism itself. We'll give separate attention to all these major varieties of Buddhism in these different cultural areas. And we'll conclude our course with a brief look at the way Buddhism has become part of the religious world we know in our own neighborhoods in Europe, North America, and in other parts of the contemporary world. Today, Buddhism has spread through much of the rest of the world, including Europe, Australia, and the Americas. I was climbing Mount Kosciuszko, the great mountain, the highest mountain in Australia. Whether we call this great or not, we'll have to discuss. But it was certainly a formidable and an interesting mountain on a trip to Australia last year. And as I was staying in one of the hostels that hikers and climbers and skiers use before they go off to climb the mountain, I ran into a group of Australian Buddhists. I was happy to know that Tibetan Buddhism was alive and well and functioning very actively and actually in quite a sophisticated way in Sydney and in some of the other cities of Australia. So Buddhism has really become a part of our modern world, and we rub shoulders with it in all sorts of ways. In America, Buddhism in some places is strongest in ethnic communities, as it is in the Sri Lankan Buddhist Sangha, the Buddhist community in Los Angeles, or in the Buddhist Churches of America, an important Japanese-based Buddhist community that is centered particularly in California and in Hawaii, but also has centers in New York and on the East Coast. It also has become extremely influential with communities of American converts. One of the most intriguing developments that we'll discuss in my final lecture has been the appearance of a whole new generation of indigenous European and American Buddhist leaders. Some of these leaders, like the 19th century theosophist, who was known as Colonel Olcott, and others, like the Boston Buddhists, who were led particularly by Ernest Fenollosa, have not only shaped the development of Buddhism here in America, but also in very curious and important ways shaped the modernization of Buddhism, shaped the development of Buddhism in Asia as well. Colonel Olcott not only helped bring Buddhism to America, but he shaped very much how the Sri Lankans understood their own tradition, and the Boston Buddhists, Fenollosa, and some of his colleagues helped members of the Japanese imperial court appropriate and protect aspects of their heritage that had fallen out of fashion in the late 19th century. So as we study American Buddhism, we'll be studying also, in a funny way, the internationalization of Buddhism and the feedback, the relationship between American Buddhists and the Buddhists of Asia.